Chapter 1, The Living World. How wonderful is the living world? The wide range of living types is amazing. The extraordinary habits in which we find living organisms, be it cold mountains, deciduous forests, oceans, freshwater lakes, deserts, or hot springs, leave us speechless. The beauty of a galloping horse, of the migrating birds, the valleys of flowers, or the attacking sharks evokes awe and a deep sense of wonder. The ecological conflict and cooperation among members of a population and among populations of a community, or even the molecular traffic inside a cell, make us deeply reflect on what indeed is life. This question has two implicit questions within it. The first is a technical one and seeks answers to what living is as opposed to the non-living, and second is a philosophical one and seeks answers to what the purpose of life is. So one is technical and it seeks answer to what living is, and opposed to the non-living, and the second is the philosophical one and it seeks answer to what the purpose of life is. So one is what is living and one is what is the purpose of living. As scientists, we shall not attempt answering the second question. We will try to reflect on what is living. Okay, we don't find the purpose, we find just the definition, like the meaning. Okay, so what is living? When we try to define living, we conventionally look for distinctive characteristics exhibited by living organisms: growth, reproduction, ability to sense environment and mount a suitable response come to our mind immediately as unique features of living organisms. Growth, reproduction, ability to sense environment and mount a suitable response. One can add a few more features like metabolism, ability to self-replicate, self-organize, interact, and emergence to this list. Okay, let us try to understand each of these. All living organisms grow. Okay, so the first one is growth. Increase in mass and increase in number of individuals are twin characteristics of growth. So mass increase and the number increase. A multicellular organism grows by cell division. In plants, this growth by cell division occurs continuously throughout their lifespan. In animals, this growth is seen only up to a certain age. However, cell division occurs in certain tissues to replace lost cells. Okay? Sometimes cell division occurs to replace lost cells. Unicellular organisms grow by cell division. Okay? I mean, unicellular organisms, they divide and they reproduce also the same way. Okay, so unicellular organisms, they grow by cell division. One can easily observe this in vitro cultures by simply counting the number of cells under the microscope. In majority of higher animals and plants, growth and reproduction are mutually exclusive events. So unicellular organisms, growth and reproduction, they are both the same kind of. And in the higher plants and animals, growth and reproduction, they are mutually exclusive events. One must remember that increase in body mass is considered as growth. Okay, increase in body mass. Non-living objects also grow if we take increase in body mass as a criteria for growth. Mountains, boulders, and sand mounds do grow. However, this kind of growth exhibited by non-living objects is by accumulation of material on the surface. In living organisms, growth is from the inside. Growth, therefore, cannot be taken as a defining property of living organisms. Conditions under which it can be observed in all living organisms have to be explained, and then we understand that it is a characteristic of living system. Okay, so it is a characteristic of living systems. A dead organism does not grow. Now think, non-living organisms, they have external growth, okay, meaning substances, they accumulate on the surface of the material and it's not intrinsic, whereas in living organism, the growth is intrinsic property. Therefore, in living organism, growth is from the inside, okay. Growth therefore cannot be called as a defining property of living organisms, because even non-living organisms show increase in mass and stuff, okay. And then But it is still a characteristic of living systems, but it is not a defining characteristic, or it is not a defining feature. Okay, next we come to reproduction. Reproduction likewise is a characteristic of all living organisms. So, in multicellular organisms, reproduction refers to the production of progeny possessing features more or less similar to those of parent. Invariably and implicitly, we refer to sexual reproduction. Organisms reproduce by sexual means also. Fungi multiply and spread easily due to millions of asexual spores they produce. Okay, in multicellular organisms, reproduction refers to the production of progeny that possesses features that are more or less similar to those of the parent. Invariably and implicitly, we refer to sexual reproduction, meaning two organisms involved, or gamete fusion taking place. Organisms reproduce by asexual means also. Fungi multiply and spread easily due to the millions of asexual spores they produce. In lower organisms like yeast and hydra, we observe budding in planaria. Okay? We observe true regeneration. That is, fragmented organism regenerates the lost part of its body and becomes a new organism. So in lower organisms like yeast, hydra, we observe budding. Okay, yeast and hydra, there is budding. Yeast is the only unicellular fungi. Okay, rest all fungi are multicellular. Good. So, yeast and hydra, there is budding. In planaria, that is flatworm, we see true regeneration, that is fragmented organism regenerates lost part of its body and becomes a new organism. The fungi, the filamentous algae, the protonema of mosses all easily multiply by fragmentation. Fungi, filamentous algae, protonema of mosses, they all multiply by fragmentation. So we learn budding, regeneration, fragmentation. Then when it comes to unicellular organisms like bacteria, unicellular algae or amoeba, reproduction is synonymous with growth. Okay? Meaning they divide and they form two daughter cells that further divide, that is increase in number of cells. We have already defined growth as equivalent to increase in cell number or mass. Okay, growth is increase in cell number or the increase in the cell mass. Hence we notice that in single cell organisms we are not very clear about the usage of these two terms, that is growth and reproduction. Okay, further, there are many organisms which do not reproduce, that is mules, sterile worker bees, infertile human couples. Hence, reproduction also cannot be an all-inclusive defining characteristic of all living organisms. Okay, it is not an all-inclusive defining character. Of course, no non-living object is capable of reproducing or replicating by itself. Okay. So in the earlier one, that is growth, we just saw that non-living organisms also increase in mass. But here, there are exceptions in living organisms itself. Okay, like they are mules, they are sterile worker bees, they are infertile human couples that do not reproduce. Then there's also like unicellular organisms that in which growth and reproduction is synonymous. Okay. Yeah, so we are not very clear about the usage of these two terms, that is growth and reproduction. They are synonymous. Okay, and therefore it is not an all-inclusive defining character, meaning it doesn't include all the living organisms. So all the living organisms do not reproduce. Okay, that's what it means. And let's also revise this again. We have yeast and hydra that in which budding takes place, planaria in which regeneration, that is true regeneration, takes place, and there's also fungi, filamentous algae, protonema of mosses, they multiply by fragmentation. And then there are organisms, unicellular organisms like bacteria, unicellular algae, amoeba, in which reproduction is synonymous with growth. Okay, another characteristic of life is metabolism. All living organisms are made of chemicals. These chemicals, small and big, belong to various classes, sizes, functions, etc., are constantly being made and changed into some other molecules. These conversions are chemical reactions or metabolical reactions. There are thousands of metabolic reactions occurring simultaneously inside all living organisms, be they unicellular or multicellular. All plants, animals, fungi, and microbes exhibit metabolism. The sum total of all the chemical reactions occurring in our body is metabolism. No non-living object exhibits metabolism. Metabolic reactions can be demonstrated outside the body in cell-free system. Okay, it can be exhibited in a cell-free system, like without the presence of a cell. An isolated metabolic reaction outside the body of an organism performed in a test tube is neither living nor non-living. Hence, while metabolism is a defining feature of all living organisms without exception, isolated metabolic reactions in vitro are not living things but surely living reactions. Hence, cellular organization of the body is the defining feature of life forms. Okay, so what we see is another characteristic of life is metabolism. All living organisms, they undergo metabolism, that is chemical reactions or metabolic reactions in the body. All of them, okay? But the reactions, they take place inside cells. And these metabolic reactions can be demonstrated outside the body also. And in cell-free system. Now, this term is important. Cell-free system. Because if it's going to be a defining character, then it should occur in a cell. Okay? Therefore, while metabolism is a defining feature of all living organisms, without exception, there's no exception, okay? Isolated metabolic reactions, that is the ones that take place in the laboratory, which is also known as in vitro. I don't know how to remember in vitro, come on. Make it up, I'm giving you like a few seconds. Are not living things, but surely living reactions. Okay, they are not living things, but they are living reactions. Therefore, since the presence of cell is important, therefore cellular organization of the body is a defining feature of living forms, okay, or life forms. Perhaps the most obvious and technical complicated feature of all living organisms is the ability to sense their surrounding or environment and respond to this environment stimuli, which could be physical, chemical, or biological. Okay, so underline that part of it. It's the most obvious and it's the most technically complicated feature, and that is of sensing the surrounding or environment and responding to the environmental stimuli, which could be physical, it could be chemical, it could be biological. We sense our environment through our sense organs. Plants respond to external factors like light, water, temperature, other organisms, pollutants, etc. All organisms from the prokaryotes to the most complex eukaryotes can sense and respond to environmental cues. Okay, from the prokaryotes to the most complex eukaryotes, they can sense and respond, because of sensing and responding to environmental cues. Photoperiod affects reproduction in seasonal breeders, both plants and animals. All organisms handle chemicals entering their body. Okay, you got that? They handle chemicals that enter their body. All organisms, therefore, are aware of their surrounding. Human being is the only organism who is aware of himself. That is, has self-consciousness. Okay? Now, self-consciousness is defining feature of a human being. So therefore consciousness therefore becomes the defining property of living organisms. When it comes to human beings, it is all the more difficult to define the living state. We can observe patients lying in coma in hospitals virtually supported by machines which replace heart and lungs. The patient is otherwise brain dead. The patient has no self-consciousness. Is it self-conscious? No, it's self-consciousness. Are such patients who never come back to normal life, living or non-living. Okay, so what I think is that they have consciousness, but they are not self-conscious, okay? That's what I think. Next, in higher classes, you will come to know that all living phenomena are due to underlying interactions. Properties of tissues are not present in the constituent cells, but arise as a result of interaction among the constituent cells. Okay, all living phenomena are due to underlying interactions. Okay, so tissues. Properties of tissues, they are not present due to they are not present in the constituent cells. Okay, so each cell doesn't have the function of the tissue, but all the cells come together and make up a tissue, and that has the properties of the tissue. Okay, like that performs the function of the tissue. Okay, so is the interaction among the cells, they form the function of the tissues. Maybe that's what I mean. Okay, maybe. I'll read that again. I confused myself. Damn. In higher classes, you will come to know that all living phenomena are due to underlying interactions. Properties of tissues are not present in constituent cells, but arise as a result of interaction among constituent cells. Similarly, properties of cell organelles are not present in the molecular constituents of the organelle, but arise as a result of interaction among the molecular components comprising the organelle. Okay? So, similarly, properties of cellular organelles are not present in the molecular constituents of the organelle, but arise as a result of interaction among the molecular components comprising of the organelle. These interactions result in emergent properties at a higher level of organization. This phenomena is true in the hierarchy of organizational complexity at all levels. It's true to the hierarchy of organizational complexity, meaning cells and tissue system, yeah, organs, tissue system, organ system, I don't know, yeah, whatever. Cells, tissues, organs, organ system, okay? That's the hierarchy. Hierarchy of organizational complexity at all levels. Therefore, we can say that living organisms are self-replicating, evolving, and self-regulating interactive systems. So they are self-replicating, evolving, self-regulating interactive systems capable of responding to external stimuli. Biology is the story of life on Earth. Biology is the story of evolution of living organisms on Earth. All living organisms, present, past and future, are linked to one another by the sharing of the common genetic material, but to varying degrees. Okay, sharing of the common genetic material, but to varying degrees. I think I'm done, but let's just revise the points. Okay, first thing to remember is Ernest Mayr gave the definition of biological species. In the properties of living organisms come growth, reproduction. These are just properties, okay? Growth, reproduction, metabolism, cellular nature, and consciousness. Whereas self-consciousness is the feature of only living organisms. Muscles and neurons do not show any division, they only show increase in size. R.H. Whittaker gave the five kingdom classification. Monera, protists, fungi, plantae, animalia. Monera are all prokaryotic, and the rest, that is protista, fungi, plantae, animalia, are all eukaryotic. Now there's a domain system wherein which is divided into monera and all eukaryotes, okay? All eukaryotes come under eukarya, and in monera there's bacteria and there's archaea. Bacteria is domain 1, archaea is domain 2, and eukarya is domain 3. Next thing, we got half a minute. Growth in living, it's intrinsic. In non-living, it's extrinsic. Defining feature is intrinsic growth. Sexual reproduction, that is syngamy or fusion of gametes. Then male honeybee, there is no syngamy. parthenogenesis takes place, which is a parthenogenesis is asexual because it has only the male gametes, I guess. Yeah, it has only the male gametes, and it's also like it's haploid, right? Male honeybee is haploid. Tapeworm is a sexual reproduction, that is, it is a hermaphrodite. Male and female gametes formed in the same organisms, but they show cross reproduction, like they have both the gametes, that is single parent, but they show sexual reproduction, like because they need to show variations. Okay, that's why. Sterile cannot form gametes. Okay, remember that. Then metabolic reactions, they take place in a cell. Those are defining features, but the ones that take place in the laboratory, that is in an isolated metabolic reactions in vitro, they are non-living, but they are living reactions. Okay, presence of cells is a defining feature, that is cellular organization is a defining feature. That's why metabolic reactions inside cells is a defining feature, but the ones that take place in the lab are not. Okay, now in vitro is in laboratory, in vivo is in body. Maybe you can remember in vivo, okay, like, yeah, in body, it seems like in body, viviparous, right, so yeah, that way you can remember. So next you come to C and C are defining features, meaning cellular organization and consciousness is defining feature. Animalia, insecta, there is 10 lakh, like insecta is like the most abundant species, it has most of the species. Okay, the total is 1.7 to 1.8 million, that is about 18 lakhs. But insecta, that is arthropoda, with insecta coming under the phylum, yeah, arthropoda is 2/3 of all the species. Okay, that's why it's the most abundant. Either one will be the answer. Okay, in the options, if it's given arthropoda or if it's given insecta, you can mark either of them, and I'm done. Next we come to diversity in the living world. If you look around, you will see a large variety of living organisms, be it potted plants, insects, birds, your pets, or other animals and plants. There are also several organisms that you cannot see with your naked eyes but are all around you. If you were to increase the area that you make observations in, the range and variety of organisms that you see would increase. Obviously, if you were to visit a dense forest, you would probably see a much greater number and kind of living organisms in it. Each different kind of plant, animal, or organism that you see represents a species. The number of species that are known and described range between 1.7 to 1.8 million. So 1.7 to 1.8 million. This refers to biodiversity, okay, all the organisms together, like all the flora, fauna, everything together, all the organisms, see, okay, or the number and types of organisms present on Earth. Biodiversity is the number and types of organisms present on the Earth. We should remember here that as we explore new areas and even old ones, new organisms are continuously being identified. As stated earlier, there are millions of plants and animals in the world. We know the plants and animals in our own area by their local names. These local names would vary from place to place, even within our country. Probably you would recognize the confusion that would be created if we did not find ways and means to talk to each other to refer to organisms we are talking about. Hence, there's a need to standardize the name of living organisms such that a particular organism is known by the same name all over the world. This process is called nomenclature. Obviously, nomenclature or naming is only possible where the organism is described correctly and we know what the organism's name is attached to. Okay, we should know what organism the name is attached to. Like, identify it first. So first we do the identification. So there's a process nomenclature in which first comes identification. Okay, in order to facilitate the study, number of scientists have established procedures to assign a scientific name to each known organism. This is acceptable to biologists all over the world. For plants, scientific names are based on agreed principles and criteria. So, agreed principles and criteria, which are provided in the International Code for Botanical Nomenclature, that is ICBN. Now remember, international, that's easy to remember, code and not some other thing. Code, okay, it's a code. For, okay, remember the word for, because the next for, okay, so plants are the main creatures, like everything depends on plants, so that's why it's a three letter word, for, and botanical nomenclature, ICBN. You may also ask how animals are named. Animal taxonomists have evolved International Code of Zoological Nomenclature. Okay, international, same as that one, code same, and here that was for. Okay, here it is off. Animals are less important, like they are not the producers, so it's a two-letter word, off. Zoological Nomenclature, that is ICZN. So, National Code of Zoological Nomenclature. The scientific names ensure that each organism has only one name. Description of any organism should enable the people in any part of the world to arrive at the same name. They also ensure that such a name has not been used for any other known organism. Biologists follow universally accepted principles to provide scientific names to known organisms. Each name has its two components, the generic name or the, what is it, genus, and the specific epithet, that is species. Okay, the generic name and the specific epithet, generic name, specific epithet. This system of providing a name with two components is called biological nomenclature. It's a two-letter word. Two components, generic name, specific epithet. Okay, and the system of providing the name with the two components is called binomial nomenclature. This name system is given by Carolus Linnaeus. That's not to be forgotten. Carolus Linnaeus is being practiced by biologists all over the world. This naming system using a two-word format was found convenient. Two-word format is convenient. Let us take the example of mango to understand the way of providing scientific names better. The scientific name of mango is written as Mangifera indica. Let us see how it is binomial name, or how it is written in the binomial nomenclature. I can't say binomial, it's not biological, come on, it's binomial. Okay, in this name, Mangifera represents the genus, while indica is a particular species or a specific epithet. So Mangifera is the generic name, that is the genus, and indica is a particular species or specific epithet. Other universal rules of nomenclature are as follows. Biological names are generally in Latin and written in italics. They are Latinized or derived from Latin irrespective of their origin. So wherever the animal or plant or any organism might be found, it is always written in Latin. Okay, it's always, the terms are always derived from Latin. So biological names are generally in Latin and written in italics. In Latin, written in italics. They are Latinized or derived from Latin irrespective of their origin. The first word is a biological name, represents the genus, while the second component denotes the specific epithet or species. Okay, so of course the first word is generic name, second word specific epithet. Both the words in a biological name, when handwritten, are separately underlined or printed in italics to indicate their Latin origin. Now that's an important point. Both words when they are written, when they are handwritten, they are underlined separately or they are printed in italics. Okay, when they are printed, it's in italics. to indicate their Latin origin. Now that's to indicate the Latin origin. The first word denoting the genus starts with a capital letter, while a specific epithet starts with a small letter. It can be illustrated with the example of Mangifera indica. Name of the author appears after the specific epithet, that is, at the end of the biological name, and is written in an abbreviated form. Okay, the author, meaning, I don't know, maybe the one that found out the plant. Maybe that's what it means. Or maybe the one that gave the name, I don't know. Name of the author, it appears after the specific epithet, that is at the end of the biological name, or maybe the one who's named it. And it is written in an abbreviated form, okay, 3 letters or 4 letters. Example, Mangifera indica lin dot, that is L-I-N-N dot. It indicates that this species was first described, okay. So now that's important. Name of the author is indicates that this species was first described by Linnaeus. Okay, it should be described by that person. Since it is nearly impossible to study all the living organisms, it is necessary to devise some means to make this possible. This process is classification. Classification is the process by which anything is grouped into convenient categories based on some easily observable characters. For example, we easily recognize groups such as plants or animals or dogs, cats or insects. Classification is a process by which anything is grouped into convenient categories based on some easily observable characters. For example, we easily categorize groups such as plants or animals or dogs or cats or insects. The moment we use any of these terms, we associate certain characters with the organism in that group. What image do you see when you think of a dog? Obviously, each one of us will see a dog and not a cat. Now, if we were to think of Alsatians, we know what we are talking about. Similarly, suppose we were to say mammals, you would of course think of animal with external ears and body hair. Likewise, in plants, if we try to talk of wheat, the picture in each of our mind will be of a wheat plant, not of rice or any other plant. Hence, all these dogs, cats, mammals, wheat, rice, plants, animals, etc. are convenient categories we use to study organisms. The scientific term for categories is taxa. So taxa is a scientific term for what? Categories. All the categories, like, it might be any category, like, which is not explained right now, but now dog is a category, like that. Okay, mammal is a category. Here you must recognize that taxa can indicate categories at different levels. Plants also form a taxa. Wheat is also a taxa. Similarly, animals, mammals, dogs are all taxa. But you know that a dog is a mammal and mammals are animals. Therefore, animals, mammals and dogs represent taxa at different level. Okay, this made it so easy to understand, I swear. Like, animals, mammals and dogs all are taxa or categories, but they are taxa at a different level. Okay, hence, based on characteristics, all living organisms can be classified into different taxa. This process of classification, okay, now the categories are called taxa, and the process of classification is called taxonomy. External and internal structures, along with the structure of cell, development process, and ecological information of organisms, are essential and form the basic of modern taxonomical studies. Okay, external and internal structures, along with the structure of the cell. Now, this is, I think this is important. I don't know for what reason. So there's external and internal structure, and there's the structure of the cell. There's the development process, and there's ecological information of organisms. Okay, that is essential. And it also forms the basic of modern taxonomical studies. Oh, what forms the basics of modern taxonomical studies? I think that's important for no freaking reason. Okay, maybe it's important. So I shall read it again. External and internal structures, along with the structure of the cell, the development process, ecological information of organisms, and these are essential and they form the basics of modern taxonomical studies. Okay, hence characterizing. Okay, now these points are also important, but that should be in order. Okay, the way Ritu ma'am told us to remember a season. I don't know what that means, but yeah. Characterization, identification, classification, and nomenclature. Oh, I think this is easy because look at this. First is characterization, okay, meaning you notice the characters, then you identify what it comes under and stuff, then you classify based on taxa, and then you name it, like nomenclature. Like only after finding the generic name and the specific epithet can you name it, right? So yeah, characterization, that is C, and I comes next, so identification, and S again, like C again, so classification, and nomenclature, zon, okay, season. I think that's, you know, what's the right term? That's helping, okay? Taxonomy is not something new. Human beings have always been interested in knowing more and more about various kinds of organisms, particularly with reference to their own use. In earlier days, human beings needed to find sources for their basic needs of food, clothing, and shelter. Hence, the earliest classifications were based on the uses of various organisms. Okay, now that's important. So the earliest classification was based on the uses of various organisms. Okay? Like on what basis they were used, like food. Now one animal was used for food, one animal or plant, okay, anything. Food, then clothing, then shelter. Okay, so human beings were since long not only interested in knowing more about different kinds of organisms and their diversities, but also the relationships among them. This branch of study was referred to as systematics. Okay, so finding the relation between what? Organisms. So what I've written on the side is, systematic, it deals with establishment of evolutionary relationship between the taxa. Okay, like protista include plantae, animalia. I don't know how that holds true. So systematic, it deals with establishment of evolutionary relationships. That's the key term, evolutionary relationship between taxa. Like your plantae and animalia is the taxa, but what it comes under is protista. Okay, the word systematics is derived from Latin word systema. So the Latin word that it's derived from is Systema, which means systematic arrangement of organisms. Linnaeus used Systema Naturae as the title of his publication. Oh my god, how am I gonna remember that? Who's Linnaeus? Carolus Linnaeus, okay? The same guy. So Linnaeus used Systema Naturae as the title of his publication. The scope of systematics was later enlarged. It was later enlarged to include identification, nomenclature, and classification. Should I underline this? Maybe you can underline this already. Okay, so identification, nomenclature, and classification. Systematics takes into account evolutionary relationships between organisms, as I said. Shall we read this again? Just the key points. Okay, systematics, these were establishment of evolutionary relationship between taxa. Then it's Latin word from which it's derived is systema, that means systematic arrangement of organism. Linnaeus used Systema Naturae as the title of his publication, in which he wrote everything about nomenclature and stuff, I guess. I don't know. Then it includes, the systematics was later enlarged, the scope of systematics was later enlarged to include identification, nomenclature, and classification. Identification, nomenclature, and classification, the last three terms, okay? So the process of taxonomy is characterization, identification, classification, and nomenclature, and systematics includes identification, classification, and nomenclature. Okay, systematics, it takes into account evolutionary relationships between organisms. That's it. Oh. Taxonomic categories. Classification is not a single step process but involves hierarchy of steps in which each step represents a rank or category. Since the category is a part of overall taxonomic arrangement, it is called taxonomic category. And all categories together constitute the taxonomical hierarchy. So each category is taxonomical category and all of them together is known as taxonomical hierarchy. Each category referred to as a unit of classification in fact represents a rank and is commonly termed as taxon, or plural is taxa. Okay, so taxa or taxon, one of the unit is basically each category, or it's the unit of classification, or it represents a rank. Okay, taxonomical categories and hierarchy can be illustrated by an example. Insects represent a group of organisms sharing common features like the three pairs of joint legs. It means insects are recognizable concrete objects which can be classified and thus were given a rank or a category. So one common feature you find out and that belongs to one class or one taxon. Okay, so insects are a category because of one of the feature, that is three pairs of joint legs. Okay, so select out a common feature, like mammals have hair, body hair and external ears, and you say mammals. So mammals is a category in that way. Okay, so thus we're given a rank or a category. Can you name other such groups of organisms? Okay, as we did just now, mammals. Remember, groups represent a category. Category further denotes rank. So remember, groups represent category. Category further denotes rank. Each rank or taxon in fact represents a unit of classification. Okay, as we said earlier, taxon is a unit of classification. These taxonomical groups or categories are distinct biological entities and not merely morphological aggregates. Okay, so they are biological entities and not merely morphological aggregates. Taxonomical studies of all known organisms have led to the development of common categories such as kingdom. Oh, so these are categories. Okay, so the categories or the taxons are kingdom, phylum or division for plants, class, order, family, genus and species. Okay, all organisms including those in the plants and animal kingdom have species as the lowest category. Okay, I shall read that again. We go from kingdom to species. Okay, so kingdom has the least similarities and species has the most similarities. So as we go from kingdom to species, similarities increase and differences decrease. Okay, so I shall read the taxons again. That are kingdom, phylum for animals, division for plants, class, order, families, genus and species. So kingdom is easy to remember, and then we have phylum or division, which is easy to remember. The only thing to remember is order first and then family, so we'll figure out how to remember that. But before that, all organisms including those in plants and animal kingdom have species at the lowest category. Now the question you may ask is how to place an organism in various categories. The basic requirement is knowledge of characters of an individual or a group of organisms. This helps in identifying similarities and dissimilarities among the individuals of the same kind of organism as well as of other kinds of organisms. So the basic requirement is the knowledge of characters. That is the basic requirement. Okay, character. Knowledge of characters of an individual or a group of organism. Okay, and that should help us identify the similarities and the dissimilarities among the individuals. Species. Taxonomic studies consider a group of individual organisms with fundamental similarities as species. Okay? A group of individual organisms with fundamental, I shall mark that, group of individual organisms with fundamental species. Sorry, fundamental similarities. The fundamental similarities is the key term. One should be able to distinguish one species from the other closely related species based on distinct morphological differences. Let us consider Mangifera indica, Solanum tuberosum, potato, and Panthera leo, that is lion. All the three names, that is indica, tuberosum, and leo, represent the specific epithets, while the first word, Mangifera, Solanum, and Panthera, are genera, okay, or also known as generic name, okay. Now, and it represents higher level of taxon or category. Generic name is the higher level of taxon or category. Each genus may have one or more than one specific epithets. Okay, one genus has under it, it has many species or specific epithets representing different organisms but having morphological similarities. Okay, so the ones that fall under genera, the ones that fall under the same genera have morphological similarities. For example, Panthera has another specific epithet that is called tigris, and Solanum has another specific epithet like nigrum. Okay, and that's nigrum, it has belongena. You got to find out the common names to them. Okay, so Panthera, what is it? It is Panthera leo. So Panthera leo has Panthera tigris, tigris and leo. Okay, Solanum has, here what was given was potato, that is Solanum tuberosum. The others are nigrum and melongena. Okay, shall we find it out right now? No, maybe you can find it out later. Human beings belong to the species sapiens. Okay, human beings belong to sapiens, Homo sapiens, okay, which is grouped in the genus Homo. Okay, the specific name for human beings is written as Homo sapiens. Okay, now I gotta mark, okay, wherever the star is marked, there's a nomenclature, that is, there's a binomial nomenclature that is to be learned. Okay, next we come to genus. Genus comprises a group of related species which has more characters in common. Okay, so more characters in common in comparison for species of other genera. We can say that genera are aggregates of closely related species. For example, potato and brinjal are two different species but both belong to the genus Solanum. Lion, Panthera, leo, leopard, Panthera, parrotus, and tiger, that is Panthera tigris, with several common features, are all species of the genus Panthera. This genus differs from other genus Felis, which includes cats. Okay, so there's stuff to remember here. Okay, so we have potato and brinjal under the same genus Solanum. Leo, parrotus, which is panther, and tigris under the same genus Panthera, and cats come under the genus Felis. Okay, family. The next category, family, has a group of related genera with still less number of similarities as compared to genus and species. Families are characterized on the basis of both vegetative and reproductive features of plant species. So they are characterized on the basis of both vegetative and reproductive features of plant species. I didn't know this. Among plants, for example, three different genera, Solanum, Petunia, and Datura, are placed in the family Solanaceae. Okay, so I should put a star here, I guess. So, I should repeat. Solanum, Petunia, Datura are placed in the family Solanaceae. Among animals, for example, genus Panthera, comprising lion, tiger, leopard, is put along with genus Felis in the family Felidae. Okay, so this just means that Panthera and Felis is a genus and it's put under the family Felidae. Okay, similarly, if you observe the features of a cat and a dog, you will find some similarities and some differences as well. They are separated into two different families, Felidae and Canidae. Okay, oh, now that's fine. Cat and dog belong to two different families. Now you know that. Okay, oh my god, it seems so confusing before and now it's so simplified. I must make notes on this. Like, I should bring those 70 rupees. What is it? Post-its and stick them. I need them. I swear I need them. Okay. I'm sorry. Okay. And similarly, if you observe the features of cat and dog, so cat belongs to Felidae family, Felidae, and dog belongs to Canidae family. Okay. Remember D-D. Okay. At the side, I've written some. What is it? The thing that comes at the end is. I don't know. Like, order is ales, family is AC for plants, and animals family is Idae, Felidae, Canidae. That way, order, you have seen earlier that categories like species, genus and family are based on a number of similar characters. Generally, order and other higher taxonomical characters are identified based on aggregates of characters. Okay, so generally order, I shall mark this, order and other higher taxonomical categories are identified based on the aggregates of characters. So aggregates of characters is the key term. Order being a higher category is the assemblage of families which exhibit a few similar characters. Okay, it is the assemblage of families which have a few similar characters. The similar characters are less in number as compared to different genera including in a family. So the families have more similar characters. Now in family Felidae, there are more similar characters than in Felidae and Canidae. Okay, that way. Now under orders come Felidae and Canidae, right? So among them there's less similarities. The similar characters are less in number as compared to different genera included in a family. Plant families like, okay, plant families are Convolvulaceae and Solanaceae, okay, as I had written there, are included in the order Polymoniale. Okay, Polymoniale. I think I should underline stuff, but I don't know, actually. So remember that Convolvulaceae is a family and Solanaceae is a family that comes in the under the order Polymoniales, mainly based on the floral characters. Okay, the animal order Carnivora include families like Felidae and Canidae. Okay, Canidae, right? Canidae is for dogs, Felidae is for cats, Felis is for cats. Okay, next we come to class. This category includes related orders. For example, order Primata, comprising monkey, gorilla and gibbon, is placed in class Mammalia along with order Carnivora that include animals like tiger, cat, dog. Class Mammalia has other orders also. Okay, so class. Okay, so I shall read it again. Class, this category includes related orders. Okay, it includes related orders. For example, order Primata, comprising monkeys, gorillas, gibbon, is placed in class Mammalia along with Carnivora that includes animals like tigers, cats and dogs. Okay, so in order we have another one that, okay, in order we have Carnivora, which includes Felidae and Canidae, remember that. And now when we come to class, the example is Mammalia. Okay, Mammalia. Yeah, Mammalia comes under Chordata that way. So a class is Mammalia, under which we have Carnivora and we have Primata. Okay, Primata or whatever. Carnivora and Primata. So primata here includes monkeys, gorillas, gibbons, and carnivora includes tiger, cat, dog. By the way, tiger and cat come in the same family. So tiger, dog, and stuff like that. That's what you're going to consider, okay? So class Mammalia has other orders too. Phylum next. Classes comprising animals like fishes, amphibians, reptiles, birds, along with mammals, constitute the next higher category called phylum. Okay, so species, amphibia, reptilia, aves, mammalia, all those are classes, okay? And what they all come under a common phylum, okay? So these are constituted in the next higher category called the phylum. All these based on the common features like presence of notochord. Based on the all these, meaning all those like mammalia and all that, amphibia, reptilia, birds, species, based on common features like presence of notochord and dorsal hollow neur dorsal is backside, okay? The backside. Dorsal hollow neural system included in phylum Chordata, okay? So all those are a part of phylum Chordata. That's what we learned from here. In case of plants, classes with a few different characters are assigned to a higher category called division. Okay, so the word for animals is phylum and the word for plants here is division. So division contains various classes of plants and phylum contains various classes of animals. Done? Next we come to kingdom. All animals belonging to various phyla are assigned to the highest category called kingdom Animalia in the classification system of animals. The kingdom Plantae, on the other hand, is distinct and comprises all plants from various divisions. Okay, kingdom has various phyla of animals and kingdom Animalia has various phyla of different animals and kingdom Plantae has different divisions of all plants. Okay. Henceforth, we will refer to these two groups as animals and plants or animal and plant kingdom. The taxonomic categories from species to kingdom have been shown in ascending order starting with species. Okay, ascending is up. So species is present in genus, is present in family, is present in order, is present in class, is present in division of phylum, and is present in kingdom. And kingdom is present in domains. Now what are the domains? They are eukarya, they are archaea, and they are bacteria. So as we go from species to kingdom, the similarities decrease and the differences increase. Okay? Now these are broad categories, however, taxonomists have also developed subcategories in this hierarchy to facilitate more sound and scientific placement of various taxa. Okay, so that's something to mark. However, taxonomists, they have developed subcategories, okay, in this hierarchy to facilitate more sound and scientific placement of various taxa. Okay, look at the hierarchy in figure 1.1. Can you recall the basis of arrangement? See, for example, as we go from higher from species to kingdom, as we go higher from species to kingdom, the number of common characters goes on decreasing. Common characters that decrease, the lower the taxa, more are the characteristics that the member within the taxon share. So this is the lower taxa, meaning. Okay, now that's important, I think. So species is the lowest taxa, okay? And the highest taxa is the kingdom. So lower the taxa, more the characteristics that the members within the the taxon share. Higher the taxa, greater is the difficulty of determining the relationship to other taxa at the same level. Okay, do you get it? Higher the category, greater is the difficulty of determining the relationship to other taxa of the same level. Hence, the problem of classification becomes more complex. So remember, lower the taxa, more are the characteristics that the members within the taxon share, and higher the category, greater is the difficulty of determining the relationship to other taxa at the same level. Hence, the problem of classification becomes more complex. Table 1.1 indicates the taxonomic categories to which some common organisms like housefly, man, mango, and wheat belong. So, common name is man. Biological name is Homo sapiens. Homo is the genus. Sapien is the species. And it belongs to the family Hominidae. Okay, so family for animals is end with Idae. So Hominidae. Order is Primata. Class is Mammalia. Then phylum of or division is Chordata. Easy peasy. Okay. Housefly is Musca domestica. So genus is Musca. Domestica is the species. Family is again, as for animals, it family ends with Idae. So here it is Musidae. Okay. Now order is what is important. Here, order is OD. Okay. Diptera. Okay. Diptera is the order. Class is Insecta. Just like that one was Mammalia, this one is Insecta. And phylum or division is Arthropoda. Okay. Do you get it? All the species, amphibia, reptiles, birds, they come under Chordata. And this one, that is the Insecta, it comes under Arthropoda. Okay, which is 2/3 of all the named species. Okay, now these two, that is man and housefly, they belong to the kingdom Animalia. Now we come to mango, which is Mangifera indica linen. Okay, lin, short form. Genus is Mandifera, Mangifera. Species is Indica. Family is Anacardiaceae. That's, I think it's easy, but I think I gotta remember that still. Okay. Sapindales is the order. Okay, so family for plants ends with ACA, and order for plants ends with ales. Okay, so Anacardiaceae and Sapindales is the order. Family is Anacardiaceae. Order is Sapindales. Class is Dicotyledonae. Class is Dicotyledonae. Remember that. Oh my god, remember that. Okay. Monocotyledonae and this Dicotyledonae. Mango is Dicotyledonae. And since it gives flower, then the phylum, not the phylum, sorry, division is Angiospermae. Got it right? Angiospermae. Okay. Wheat next, which is Triticum. Triticum estivum. The genus is Triticum, species is Estivum, family is difficult, I guess. It's Poaceae. Now we just read, of course, it ends with CA and Sapindales. Here also, there's an ales, that is Poales. Okay, ordered for wheat is Poales, class is Monocotyledonae, and division is Angiospermae. And mango and wheat both belong to the kingdom Plantae. So all the eukaryotes, they come in the eukarya domain. So all these belong to eukarya domain. Like literally all the kingdoms, okay? Like, not all the kingdoms, like all from Protista to Animalia. Taxonomical aids. Taxonomic studies of various species of plants and animals and other organisms are useful in agriculture, forestry, industry, and in general in knowing our bioresources and their diversity. These studies would require correct classification and identification of organisms. Identification of organisms requires intensive laboratory and field studies. The collection of actual specimen of plant and animal species is essential and is the prime source of taxonomic studies. These are also fundamental to studies and essential for training in systematics. Okay, so the collection of actual species, specimen of plants and animals is essential and is the prime source of taxonomic studies. What? The collection of the species. I mean the collection of the actual specimen. These are also fundamental to studies and essential for training in systematics. It is used, I think I should mark all of that. It is used for classification of an organism, and the information gathered is also stored along with the specimen. In some cases, the specimen is preserved in for future studies. Okay, I shall mark till essential for training in systematics. Biologists have established certain procedure and technique to store and preserve the information as well as the specimen. So the information is necessary and the specimen is necessary. Some of these are explained to help you understand the usage of these aids. Herbarium, so they are divided into two, okay, dead and alive. So first we do the dead. So in the dead, the first one that comes is herbarium. It is a storehouse of collected plant specimens that are dried, pressed on sheets. Further, these sheets are arranged according to a universally accepted system of classification. These specimens, along with their description on herbarium sheets, become a storehouse or repository for future use. The herbarium sheets also carry a label providing information about date and place of collection. English local and botanical names, family, collectors' names, etc. Herbaria also serve as a quick referral system in taxonomical studies. So singular is herbarium and many are herbaria. Okay, so herbarium, it's a storehouse of collected plant specimens. So collected plant specimens that are dried, then they are pressed, and then they are preserved on sheets. Okay, then the sheets, they are arranged according to universally accepted system of classification. Okay, this universally accepted classification based on which they are arranged. Then the specimen, along with their descriptions on herbarium sheets, becomes a storehouse or repository for future use. Okay, the specimen and the description. Now the description that it carries, that the herbarium sheets carry, is a label providing information about the date. Then we have the place of collection in English, in local and botanical names. Okay, so we have the date of collection and the place from where it is collected. Then the English, local and botanical names. Then the family, okay, that's what the main thing to remember. Family is written and the collector's name. Family is written, that's the most important thing. Not like order or class or anything else. Family, okay? I think family is going to be easy to remember. Because family, you know. Okay, whatever. Herbaria also serve as quick referral systems. So they are quick referral systems in taxonomical studies. Next we come to the next, like the dead taxonomical aid is museum. So museum is biological museums are generally set up in educational institutes such as schools and colleges. Museums have collection of preserved plant and animal specimens for study and reference. Specimens are preserved in the containers or jars in preservation solutions. Okay, the preservation solution is HCHO. I don't know what it's called. What is it called? Aldehyde. Oh my god. Ethanaldehyde. Okay, whatever. Okay, so biological museums, they are set up in educational institutes such as schools and colleges. Then they have collections of preserved plants and animal species. Plants also and animals also. Herbarium was only for plants and that to dry it and stuff, all that. Okay. For study and reference, this one is. And they're preserved in containers or jars in preservative solutions like HCHO. The plants and animal species may also be preserved as dry specimen, okay, dried up. Insects are preserved in insect boxes after collecting, killing and pinning them, okay. So they are collected, killed and pinned. Collected, killed and pinned. Larger animals like birds, mammals are usually stuffed and preserved. So all those insects, they are collected, then they are killed, they are preserved in insect boxes, okay. They are collected, killed and then pinned. Larger animals, they are, after they die, they are stuffed and they are preserved. Museums often have collections of skeletons of animals too, like even the fossils and stuff, okay. And skeletons of animals, okay, fine. Next we come to the alive one, alive taxonomical aids. First one is botanical garden, which is for plants. Okay, so botanical gardens, these specialized gardens have collections of living plants for reference. Plant species in these gardens are grown for identification purpose. So the main reason is identification purpose. And each plant is labeled indicating its botanical or scientific name and its family. Okay, now family is very important here. In herbarium also, which is the quick referral system in taxonomical aids, they also, the family is also put in. Then over here also botanical garden, which is which is for identification purposes. The plant is labeled with the botanical scientific name and its family. The famous botanical gardens are Kew in England. Then there's Indian Botanical Garden at Howrah in India. And there's a National Botanical Research Institute at Lucknow in India. So I'll repeat that. Kew in England, Indian Botanical Garden, which is at Howrah in India, and a National Botanical Research Institute, National Botanical Research Institute at Lucknow in India. Oh my God, why are the last two difficult? Okay, so this is the largest in India, Indian Botanical Garden. Come on, it's like Indian Botanical Garden, see? There's some significance to the name also, like Indian Botanical Garden, Howrah, India, okay? And there's a National Botanical Garden, Now, this is not written as National Botanical Garden. Okay. That's the way to remember. Q in England, you'll remember that. But here, Indian Botanical Garden, it's the largest in Asia. That's why it has the term Botanical Garden at the end, which is at Howrah in India. And the second one, which is National Botanical Research Institute. It doesn't have the term Botanical Garden. Okay, it has Research Institute. It's at Lucknow in India. Okay, now that's not the largest and stuff. But next. Okay, now that's that one's done, which has living plants for identification purpose, is done. Now next, alive taxonomical aid is zoological parks. These are the places where wild animals are kept in protected environments under human care and which enable us to learn about their food habits and behavior. Okay, wild animals under human care helps us to learn about their food habits and behavior. All animals in a zoo are provided as far as possible the conditions similar to their natural habitats. Children love visiting these parks, commonly called zoos. Okay. Now, alive and the dead ones are done. Now, analytical aids, we come on analytical aids, like finding out all the ones that help in classification. So, first we come to key. Key is another taxonomical aid that is used for identification of plants and animals based on similarities and dissimilarities. Now, key is used for both plants and animals based on similarities and dissimilarities. Keys are based on the contrasting characters generally in a pair called couplets. Okay, there are two contrasting characters, and now the contrasting two characters, it's a pair, so it's known as a couplet. It represents the choice made between two opposite opinions. Okay, the choice that is made between two opposite opinions. This results in acceptance of only one and rejection of the other. Each statement in the key is called a lead. Separate taxonomical keys are required for each taxonomic category, such as family, genus, species, for identification purpose. Okay, now I think the rest of it you'll remember, but the most important, I mean the thing you might forget is the last line, that is, separate taxonomical keys are required for taxonomic categories such as family, genus, species for identification purposes. Keys are generally analytical in nature, okay? Analytics. Like figuring out which characters match which organisms, and based upon that, like classifying them. That's what it helps in. Flora, manuals, monographs, and catalogs are some other means of recording descriptions. Okay, so just like key helps in, analytics, flora, manuals, monographs, and catalogs also help in analysis, okay? So they are other means of recording descriptions. They also help in correct identification. Analytics is identification. Analysis is identification. Okay. Flora contains the actual account of habitat and description of plants of a given area. Now, of course, it's flora, meaning plants. So it contains the actual account of habitat and distribution. So I gotta underline that. Habitat and distribution of plants, but of a given area. Okay, they provide the index to the plant species found in a particular area. Okay, they provide the index, it's just an index to the plant species found in a particular area. So now flora is description of all plants in an area. Okay, so it's a description to all plants in an area, and it gives an index to plant species. Then it tells us about the habitat and distribution. That's it. But remember, it's of an area. Okay. Next, we come to manuals. Manuals are useful in providing information for identification of names of species found in an area. Now, manuals also an area. Okay. So they help in providing information for identification of names. They provide information for identification of names of a species found in the area. I think you gotta by heart this, okay? Like read it tomorrow, read it the day after tomorrow, all that. Okay, so all species, that is manuals we're doing, okay? Manuals are useful to provide information of all species, meaning plants as well as animals, okay? Of an area. Now one area, plants and animals, okay? Flora is one area, only plants. That's all we have about manuals. Identification of names. They provide information and help us identify the names. Okay. Monographs contain information on any one taxon. Okay. Monograph, it contains information, meaning it contains a description or information on any one taxon. Okay. Mono, meaning one. So one taxon. So one big category, meaning one big taxon. Okay, that's it. Next, we have catalogs. All species of an area is what it contains. Okay, now remember flora, manual, and catalogs are of an area. Okay, of an area. Monograph is easy to remember. It's just information on any one taxon. Okay, and catalogs is all species of an area, but alphabetically arranged or methodically arranged. Like, it's arranged in a particular manner, okay? Like, based on anything. It can be alphabets, or it can be, I don't know, like, regions. I don't know. Anyway, but methodologically, that's the word, methodologically, okay? So I'll describe all of them now. Now first we come to the flora. It gives a description of all the plants, description of all the plants of an area. It's the index to plant species. It helps in identifying the habitats and distribution, okay? Manual is also all species, plants and as well as animals, but of an area, okay? Then monograph is information on any one taxon. And catalogs, what we have, catalogs is all species of an area, but in a methodological manner, okay, like alphabetically or anyhow, but all the species means plants as well as animals. Okay, next we come to the summary. The living world is rich in variety. Millions of plants and animals have been identified and described, but large numbers still remains unknown. The very range of organisms is in terms of color, size, habitat, physiological and morphological features make us seek the defining characteristic of living organism. In order to facilitate the study of kinds and diversity of organisms, biologists have evolved certain rules and principles for identification, nomenclature, and classification of organisms. The branch of knowledge dealing with these aspects is referred to as taxonomy. The taxonomical studies of various species of plants and animals are useful in agriculture, forestry, industry, and in general for knowing our bioresources and their diversity. The basic taxonomy like identification, naming and classification of organisms are universally evolved under international codes. Okay, I should read that line again. The basics of taxonomy like identification, naming and classification of organisms are universally evolved under international codes, meaning it is common for the entire world, like to, you know, eliminate the local naming and, you know, put them under the same taxonomical arrangement. Okay, next we have based on the resemblance and distinct differences, each organism is identified and assigned a correct scientific biological name comprising two words as per binomial system of nomenclature. An organism represents or occupies a place or position in the system of classification. There are many categories or ranks and are generally referred to as taxonomical categories or taxa. All the categories constitute a taxonomical hierarchy. Taxonomists have developed a variety of taxonomical aids to facilitate identification, naming and classification of organisms. These studies are carried out from the actual specimen, which are collected from the field and preserved as referrals in the form of herbaria, museum, and in botanical gardens and zoological parks. It requires special techniques for collection and preservation of specimen in herbaria and museums that we just read, okay? Yeah, and family is the most important thing. It's in both botanical gardens as well as in herbariums. Okay, now, live specimens, on the other hand, of plants and animals are found in botanical gardens and zoological parks. Taxonomists also prepare and disseminate information through manuals, monographs for further taxonomical studies. Taxonomical keys are tools that help in identification based on characteristics. And there's also a catalog which has all species of an area, but which is arranged methodically. Okay, so taxonomists prepare and disseminate information through. So what do these manuals and monographs helps in? They have been preparing and disseminating information, okay, for further taxonomical studies. And taxonomical keys, all that, couplet and lead, all that are tools that help in identification based on characteristics.